welcome to the first Albion Roar of 2021 here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm A.D. Packham, and we are hoping that our old acquaintance list be forgot in association with allfootballshirts.com. Well, Happy New Year, everyone, and let's face it, we're all glad to see the back of 2020. It wasn't such a vintage year for the Albion either, highlighted by the fact that we only recorded one home win all year. Too many points have been left out on the pitch with us drawing 16 games over the calendar year and not showing a ruthless streak. But as we turn into 2021, we have the chance to put that right through the visit of Wolves to the Amex today. Let's hope we can start the year with a big 3 points. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares. And as we look back over the last 12 months, we're delighted to welcome back Marcus Hancocks and Andy Bass. Happy New Year, guys. Lovely to see you. Unfortunately, it seems too long since we've seen each other in the flesh, but it's been a rubbish year, isn't it?
Understatements of the session. Yeah.
Do you remember when
should we just go to the pub now? Oh, hang on, we can't.
Do you remember when the Queen described her year and her Christmas message as an annus horribilis?
And yeah, this is the annus anus.
Took it one stage further and called it is annus anus. I think that's more what it's like. Yeah, I've had better years. I suppose on a personal front, I've had worse years. But from a footy point of view, and obviously from a social point of view, yeah, it's been trying, but. I think that the nature of technology, and it's one of those things I've spent a little bit of time thinking about, probably because I've got so much time on my hands. It's just the nature of how technology has brought us together, and it's how society is probably going to be changing whenever this virus actually finishes. You know, here we are. We've been doing our last, 20, 30 Albion Roars on Zoom. And, you know, the sound quality hasn't been so great, but, you know, we like to think we've got our message across, we've got our opinions across, and, you know, whether you agree or disagree with them. But the nature of what we're doing here just makes you think, well, what is going to be normality after this? Are we going to go into the studio even and do this? Or are we going to do this on a Friday night with cans of lager at our computers? So, you know, it's the world has changed. I mean, not necessarily for the worse, you know, with the COVID, but it's what happens when we come out of it. And I think that's going to be the interesting point, you know, with 21 and going forward.
It's funny that, because I was having some chat with some neighbours last night about all sorts of things, but this obviously did come into it. And I was saying that I really can't wait to get back into the studio, because it means a sense of normality has returned and we're actually able to be in a small room with people again. And, you know, it's important. And I think it's
terrified
if we go, to do this.
You'll be terrified once we go back live, won't you?
Not at all. But I mean, I'm terrified I won't know how the desk works anymore.
Well, yeah, there is that.
Not I mean, that I did in the first place, but...
I mean, Andy and Marcus, you're quite the philosophers as we know it, especially after a few Harveys. But where do you think that actually... I mean, we can get onto the football stuff, but certainly with what we're doing now, where do you think that the 2021 will take us in terms of socializing? Do you think that we're actually going to leap back into the sort of like the fountain of fun like we did before, or do you think there's going to be a change in how we all see each other?
No, I think we'll dive back into the fountain of fun as soon as we're given the excuse and permission to do so.
I think Andy's right. Yeah, the majority of people, but there will be a certain resistance amongst some people, which I can understand, because as people have said, the mental health elements of this probably far outweighs the actual physical, you know, debilitating of, you yeah. know, for the many thousands that have died, it's the many hundreds of thousands that have probably suffered, you know, mentally for whatever reason. It's so yeah, I think the majority of people will, but there will still be some hesitancy until, you know, a vaccine is rolled out, etc. Et
absolutely. I mean, Marcus, especially
those who are vulnerable as well.
Yeah,
you know, the elderly, right. And those with breathing difficulties, that kind exactly. of thing. You know, with yeah. respiratory.
I mean, my kids, for example, they're 21 and 20. You know, I mean, they'll be out straight away. You know, the minute there's a green light, they'll be out, bang, parties. You know, etc. Et
so will their dad.
Yeah. Well,
but,
maybe.
But Marcus, you just hit on the the nail on the head there, because it's like you hit on the unseen killer. I mean, with the COVID figures, which we're seeing on the news every day, with them rising and the death toll and everything else, you can see that's a tangible. You can see the figures, but the unseen killer is the fact, like you said, the mental effect that it's having on people, the fact that and the mental illness that people are suffering from, not being able to go to the football, not being able to see their friends or their family, or go out or go to the shops or whatever. It's more than just,
we just want our lives back, frankly.
Yeah, but it's more, you know, like I said, I mean, I've spoken to people and I've seen interviews with people with the fact that, you know, going to football on a Saturday is the only time they ever leave the house for some people. It becomes the only time they ever see their friends. It's their social outlet. And, you know, and the mental strain of not being able to go for some people, or not being able to go to gigs, for instance, or be able to go out to the pub or to the restaurants, or it's such a big thing.
So with that in mind, Andy, I mean, how are you coping? I mean, you know, with the vaccine, you know, bumping its way down the pipeline, and with, you know, every effort being made, and you just think, even with the turn of a calendar year, there's this kind of always ridiculous renewed optimism of hope and everything like that. You think, well, we haven't had a terrible time this year yet. I mean, can you see the light at the end of the tunnel? And you know, what colour is that light?
Well, yeah. There will be light. I mean, these things always get resolved in the end, and we're now actually taking positive action to do it. It's just how long is it going to take for the vaccines to roll out? I mean, it's hard having this discussion right now, because we do know for a fact that the next few weeks are going to be pretty tough. But, you know, the light is at the end of the tunnel now, and you just have to focus on that and just get through this difficult period as best you can.
Okay. Well, let's focus on the positives. Oh, hang on. No, we're about to start.
No, hang on. Football. No.
But let's rewind back 12 months to January and New Year's Day, a year ago today, where we peaked too soon. The year started with a visit of Chelsea, and Alireza's won the goal. We definitely peaked too soon.
Well, that was the first league points we'd ever picked up off Chelsea. I mean, we hadn't had too many games before them. Before we got promoted to the Premier League this time round, there was only two seasons of which Albion and Chelsea were in the same division, and yet, which is kind of interesting given that Chelsea were bumping around the bottom part of the second division in the sort of like late 70s and early 80s. but yeah, I mean, let's face it, the main thing we can remember about that is Ali's goal. Apart from maybe, I think there's something at the back of my head that says that, you know, I think it was a worthy point, you know, and especially as we were in a given direction where playing the top six was still a big thing. I mean, these days, and I'm sure we'll come to it, playing the top six, I think possibly with the exception of Manchester City, who we haven't really matched yet, but playing the top six is not something that we need to be quite as frightened of as we were. But back then, a year ago, there was still a kind of a thing over it that said, you know, Chelsea, a big game, got to really concentrate.
Well, yeah, exactly that, because it's a question that I asked to both yourself, Andy, and Marcus, and Al at the beginning of every season when we do our season predictions, and the question is points against the top six,
and who are the top six now?
Well, that's another question entirely. Yeah. But you know, I mean, it was something where we did improve. Obviously, we got. I mean, if you're talking about the top six, you've got to include Arsenal, and obviously, we beat them home and away last season. Obviously, we lost this week, which we'll come to in a bit. But you know, it was certainly, you know, we got a point at home against Liverpool. We in a game, I was disappointed with just a point. We should have got a point, at least a point against Man United at home, but we'll come to that.
I thought you were doing a review of 2020. You're already leaping ahead to November.
I'm way ahead. Okay, so the rest of January, we got knocked out of the FA Cup by Sheffield Wednesday. There was defeats at Everton and away at Bournemouth, and a home draw with Aston Villa, which basically was our whole year in microcosm. Played really well, got a sucker punch at the end when they equalised, when we should have been 4 or 5 up.
But we haven't.
Aaron Molloy basically handed Aston Villa 4 points personally last year.
Go on.
By getting us two silly bookings straight after each other up there, and then by giving a ball away at the touchline, it allowed Grealish to basically run for and score on the way. I just remember someone at the time commenting that he's personally given Villa 4 points, which made me chuckle. But,
if we go back to the beginning, I mean, because one of the highlights, and there have been few and far between, but one of the highlights was that goal, which, you know, everyone loves a good sort of flying overhead kick. What was your take on that? I mean, I know we were excited at the time, but what, you know, with a year distant, what do you reckon to that goal?
It was fantastic. It was just an absolutely thrilling moment. And quite often people say, you meet a moment with genuine disbelief. That was one of those moments, because I kind of had to check that actually happens, because it was so bizarre.
I was sat next to you at the time, Andy, and your face of absolute amazement and wonderment was like you were, your hands in your head, your eyes wide. You were like, ah. It was like absolutely, you could not believe it. I don't think anyone else could believe it. And when you watch the footage of the goal from multiple
Chelsea
angles,
players' faces.
But when you watch that goal from multiple angles, and you see the faces of the people in the north stand who clearly couldn't believe it either. It was an absolute highlight of my time of watching Albion, and it was a wonderful, wonderful goal.
The only other time I can recall actually having kind of the facial expression of, oh my God, I've left the gas on at home sort of thing, was for, the Slovak player, come on, ugly bloke, went to Millwall.
Oh, Yuri Skalak.
It was Skalak's Thunderbolt. Yeah. Because you could see him revving up for it. Yeah, you could see him revving up for it. The entire West Stand up are going, no, you know, screaming no, because you know it's going to end up, you know, in the car park. And the net got in the way. But the thing is, you could see that coming. But with Jackenbach's goal, which had just come after his first goal, which I think was against Bournemouth about a week ago.
That's right.
It's like I say, you could see the reaction of the Brighton players. You could see the Chelsea players. But I think it's also about, you know, the commentators as well, Marcus. I mean, they got properly excited about it.
Well, quite right too, because it's a, you know, it's a bloody good goal. I mean, whichever way you slice it, it's fabulous. I think the commentators were just as surprised as everybody else at the time.
And it also meant that Andy got a point in the pre-season predictions when he predicted that. We'll have a goal in the goal of the season competition, and we did.
All right,
there we go.
Well done.
Well,
I could have got one.
Well, let's move on to February then, and this is probably a poignant one for you, Marcus. We started with, on the 1st of February, we were away at the Olympic Stadium at West Ham. We're 3-1 down in this game, in fact, and there was a lot of. People getting quite antsy, to be fair. We came back to draw 3-3, and Glenn Murray scored. The goal got ruled out by VAR. Then it got ruled out by the ref, but it was allowed by VAR correctly. But it was also Glenn Murray's last goal for Brighton.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. You know, what a game. You know, 3-1 down, looking at the bottom of a barrel. We managed to claw it back to 3-3, and West Ham just absolutely went to pieces. I think, was it last minute, Solly March? I think either hit the post or hit the crossbar.
We
nearly grabbed a 4-3 win, which would have been absolutely incredible. But you're right, that's when the natives had probably started to get a bit restless at West Ham away, because we were in the middle of a not very good run at the time. But obviously, you know, I mean, you know, I get happy about whenever Glenn scores anyway, and for me, it's just a shame that that's at the moment his last Brighton goal. But you know, who knows? He's out of favour at Watford. You know, we're not exactly scoring goals at the moment, so. Who knows?
Who remembers the other goals that we scored that day?
There was Pascal Gross, and there was an own goal.
Yeah,
I was asking Marcus, what do you remember of Pascal Gross's goal?
It was brilliant. The way he just sort of got a toe to it, the slowest man in football, and he managed to just somehow from what I remember, outpace all of the West Ham defence. And, you know, and sort of, no, he didn't. But for somehow the ball just sort of fell to him. He managed to just sort of stuck a, I seem to remember he sort of like almost literally got a toe to it and it just sort of rolled up over the line.
I think it was sort of sucking the ball in.
You're like, you know, and it just sort of, and then as it rolled in, it was just like, oh my God, we might actually get something out of this game. And then
it was absolutely hilarious.
Isn't it incredible that we remember the best goals and the worst goals? Yeah. That was probably one of the worst goals we've ever scored. I think it was a clearance or an attempted headed clearance or something that just hit him. Something like that. Keystone Kop's defending and it hit him and it seemed to take forever to go in. I'll tell you what. Yeah.
It's still rolling in now.
you know, I think it's probably one of the only goals where the slow motion replay is quicker than the actual action itself.
This is true. Okay. Well, the month continued to roll on, and there was draws at home to Watford and away at Sheffield United, and it was followed by a home defeat to Palace, which was the last time the Amex was full.
That makes you feel better, doesn't it?
I know. Always Palace, isn't it? Always
Palace. Yeah, lose at home to Palace. Right, close the place down. Start again. Make sure the toilets are clean.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I guess we could see it coming. And I think that probably at the time that we knew that lockdown was coming, we just didn't know what the exit was. You know, I think no one really saw it as being a 5-minute fix. But, you know, I mean, AD and I have been to the Amex a few times, and it is a privilege. We say it, and we mean it. It is a privilege to go. And when we're in the West Stand up, we're on our own. I mean, we're probably no closer than all good 20, 30, 40 feet between us and the next person. And there's obviously a few people that have been as part of a 2,000, well, three matches where we've had 2,000 people in. And no one else has been in the ground, you know, as a spectator or anything like that since that Palace game. And I don't know, Andy, Marcus, have either of you two been to any of those three games where the crowd was allowed in?
Yes.
Yeah. Chelsea and Southampton.
Andy, you've been to
Sheffield United.
Okay, so you know you kind of miss it. I mean, actually, give us. I know we're leaping ahead here, but you know this is the nature of what lockdown is. Give us a flavour of what it's like when there's 2,000 people there rather than 30,000.
It was all right, actually. It's weird. It felt better than the crowds that you get at like the League Cup games, where it would be like 15,000 people, which you kind of think should still be a pretty decent crowd. But actually, with the 2,000 people in there, because it's so empty and you're sort of rattling around in it, you don't really have any sort of expectation of it being normal. So you just think anything is better than nothing. And it was a good experience. I enjoyed being back, enjoyed making my way back up to the Amex, and I enjoyed sure. the experience.
But you miss even, your mates, though,
even if the game was very frustrating, but you know, that's football, isn't it?
But you miss your mates, don't you?
Yeah, that was but actually I did actually know quite a lot of people that were at that game, so was able to say hello. Yeah.
You're gone, Marcus.
I mean, I think it's good if you went with your mates. And I mean, you know, we're all you know, long in the tooth, and you know, we all remember the Johnston Paints games at with Dean when there's literally a similar size crowd, and
you know,
arguably a similar standard of football the way those two games went. But at the same time, you know, that was quite good though, because you sort of walk in, you said hello to everybody in the South Stand, because mainly everybody was there, you know. So when I went to the Southampton game, obviously I travelled with Brett and Matthew, but then they sort of went into the North Stand and sort of sat where their allocated seat was, and I went into the East Stand because I bought one on a ticket exchange. And whilst it was nice to be back at the football, and I've watched plenty of football games on my own, because I, you know, as you know, we've had it tongue-in-cheek, but you know, I used to go to watch Grand from Town when I was based up there, and you know, watched various non-league games on my own, but I liked it, but I didn't like it as much because I didn't have any of my other friends around me. But that's not to say I don't like watching football on my own, because I have done. It was all right. And I was glad to see fans back. But for me, I think if it ever happened again, I would probably want to go with somebody and be near them, like Andy was saying, or know people. Because the people where I was in the East End, I didn't really know anybody. So it wasn't even like, you know, like sometimes you're at football with nodding terms of people.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff. There was none of that, you know. Most of, you know, people were quite friendly. It was, yeah. I think I would do it again, definitely, because I didn't feel in any way unsafe or anything like that. Paul Barber's right. It's, you know, it's a COVID secure environment, but I'd certainly want to go with a chum at the very least, I think, if I was to do it again.
Well, look, we've got to, I mean, obviously that defeat to Palace was hard to take. And I leaving the ground that day, not realising that was the last time that we're going to be inside with everyone sitting in their own seats for what's probably going to be over a year. We just didn't know at that point, did we? But then, let's move on to March. The draw at Wolves was the last game before lockdown and the last game with a crowd, with a full crowd that we played. And we yet to record a victory in 2020. We actually, funnily enough, straight after that game on the Sunday, we were in we did the Reverbathon with you, Andy, and in the pub. Well, let's just fast forward to the week after that then a little bit, because that was when the Arsenal game got postponed. It was meant to be, was it meant to be on the Friday night? I can't remember.
No, it was the Saturday, because I did the Renf quiz on the Friday the night before.
Everything was prepared. Arteta got the virus, which is why the game got postponed. Mm. But it was also poignant for us, Al, because that was the last time we were in the studio.
Were we in the studio that day?
Yeah, for the Arsenal game. So we had Paul Barber on the show, on the phone, and it was the last
time. So we were at the open market that day.
We were in the open market, yeah.
I'll take your word for it. I have no recollection of us being there.
Yeah, because we were talking about the fact that obviously all the food and everything had been delivered to the stadium already for the game the next day,
and the fact that
the club delivered it all to food banks and to people who needed food, which was a wonderful, wonderful thing for us to actually do, and you know what, I mean, that's probably key in the fact, because throughout the lockdown, the Albion were front and centre of everything. Paul Barber was absolutely brilliant. I don't know why no other clubs kept, like, put their heads above the parapet, but like speaking to journalists in the press pack, and they are so grateful to the Albion for what we actually did, because otherwise they'd have nothing to write about.
Well, look at Henry Winter in our most recent programme. He waxed lyrical about us, in which case, let's Marcus, Andy, again, talk us through how you felt the club tried to engage with the community, you know, in the early days of lockdown.
I thought the club, as always, did an excellent job. They just have people there that are very empathetic, very quick-minded, and it just comes naturally to them. So,
Marcus,
No, I agree with Andy. They were on the front foot from day one. The Albion, without a doubt, as Adi said, from donating the unused food to the food banks, to Paul Barber engaging with supporters and telling them, you know, exactly what's happening, and, you know, keeping them fully informed about, you know, when the next games may or may not be. And of course, as well, as Adi was saying, the bigger picture of banging the drum for, you know, standing against this silly business of neutral venues and playing all the games in Birmingham and all that. And, you know, okay, all right, ironically, the home advantage hasn't really panned out. But at the same time, you know, I think, and then it transpired that in the early days, as Adi was saying, you know, about the journalists wanting something to write about, and it was, oh yeah, Brighton are saying that because they don't want to go down, because, you know, even though we weren't actually in the relegation zone at that point, Brighton don't want to go down, blah blah blah. But as it turns out, when it came to the voting, oh, funnily enough, a lot of the clubs actually voted for what the Albion wanted, which was playing their games at home and not, you know, this silly...
Well, quite. I mean, the amount of grief that Liverpool fans and Leeds fans and Sheffield United fans gave the Albion for this, and you just think, you absolutely tiny-brained little twerps, you have no idea what you're on about, and actually this is all about, you know, basic safety and basic decency.
Exactly. And also the players raising money, you know, for the NHS causes and things like that, and donating some of their salary and, you know, the I don't think it was a Premier League sanctioned thing. The players took it upon themselves. I think they wanted the Premier League to sort of adopt. I think they eventually did something similar. But again, that was, you know, driven by the Albion. They were absolutely at the forefront of everything of this, which is, you know, a credit to the, well, a credit to the club and obviously a credit to the, you know, a benefit to the community, without a doubt.
Okay. Well, but on that note, where you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online, radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. As ever, this show is brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil has actually given us his shirt of the year.
Tricky one to work out this one,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to struggle with this one, I think, guys.
Adrian, you always do.
Okay, Marcus, why don't you just describe the shirt for me? Front and back, if you can.
Well, it's at the front, it's a traditional blue and white stripes, which many of us are familiar with. It's on the back, it's half white with stripes at the bottom, which would indicate that it's a more recent shirt. Andy, do you want to elaborate any more on it? It's it's got,
I think, the name on the back that's the big thing here, mate.
It's got Black Lives Matter on the back, so it's definitely from this season. And then on the front we have a badge that has got some kind of bird on it. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say this might be a Brighton and Hove Albion shirt.
Yeah.
Oh my God, Andy, how did you know? How did you guess?
It's yes, one of the more cryptic shirts.
Yeah. And here you go. This is Phil's shirt of the year. And it's finally a Brighton Nike shirt that looks decent, says Phil. And it's, of course, this was the shirt that the Albion wore for the first game of Project Restart, which was went once that our only home win of the year, which was a 2-1 win against Arsenal. Note the namesake for this game was changed to Black Lives Matter. So instead of the player's name, it had Black Lives Matter on the back. And it also features the NHS logo on the front. It is a lovely shirt. It was one of the better Albion ones, and it is a bespoke one from Nike. But can you tell me who wore this shirt? This is a match-worn shirt.
Aaron Moy.
Yes, it was. This is Aaron Moy's match-worn shirt. And obviously, this will be on all of our social channels, of course. Please go keep looking at the stuff on oldfootballshirts.com. It is absolutely amazing. If you love football shirts, there's something for everyone on there, and there's some proper mingers, as we've discussed before. But let's move on then to that game then. And it was the first game that the Albion, the only game we won at home all year. I can't believe
it. Was that our
that.
First game after lockdown?
It was, yeah. And
were you there?
I was there, yeah. It was
okay. Let me answer this question, AD. Bearing in mind the West Stand up another season, his son, and it was a beautiful day that day. Was it cold there as then that day as well?
No, it wasn't. It was very bizarre because it was one of those games where when you're sitting in the press box, you're basically meant to be neutral. You invoke your inner David Coleman. You're like 1-0, and you can't really celebrate. But when that winner went in the last minute of injury time from Morpai, you know, there wasn't an awful lot of what's the word I'm looking
there was
for?
No neutrality.
There wasn't much neutrality going on. It was basically the place went up.
Really?
Those who were there, and it was absolutely wonderful. Obviously after that game, there was Neil Morpai's press conference where he absolutely tore Arsenal a new one. Guendouzi never played for Arsenal again after that.
Tell us, I mean, that must be one of the better games of the season, Andy and Marcus. So you know, tell us through your recollections of that, like, you know, a height of summer game.
It was a terrific game. I was quite nervous before it started because of the precariousness of our predicament in terms of league position. But I just thought we played without fear. We really, I mean, we got off to a slow start. You know, like the first 15, 20 minutes, thought, well, hang on a minute, Arsenal are going to roll us over. But once we sort of settled down and got into the game, we really took the game to them. And I thought we were excellent. And obviously we had to wait until the 95th minute for the winner, but it was a deserved it was a deserved winner. I thought we showed character coming back from the goal down. I really thought that was it when they scored. And, you know, it was really sort of against the run of play. I thought, well, that's it. But we
good
showed
goal Arsenal scored.
Yeah, but we really...
Yeah, Nicolas Pepe, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a lovely goal as well. It was very well taken. But we showed a lot of character, a lot of fight, but we married that with some nice football as well. And I know we're going to do sort of our sort of goal of the year thing, but this is my goal of the year for me. exquisite football.
The question I want to ask though here, Andy, is that this game was when Project Restart happened, we were allowed 5 subs, and Potter made full use of the 5 subs in pretty much every game, and there was only about two seconds left on the clock when he brought on Alexis McAllister, who created that last goal. I mean, what did you think of the 5 subs thing?
I was all in favour of it. It worked for us. I don't care whether it works for other teams. It definitely worked for us, and I thought it was a good thing. We made good use of it, and it probably kept us up.
Okay, well, talk us through that goal, which you love so much.
Well, it was just great sort of passing from McAllister. Literally walks on, strides onto the pitch and just like beautifully just passes that ball in. Now, I can't remember who it was. It was Mope. Was it Connolly that flicked it up?
There was a dummy, yeah.
Yeah. The ball gets flicked in over the defence, and Mope just runs in there, and just a really good finish. I mean... That was not an easy goal to score, but it was all instinct. The timing of it was just—it was exquisite. It was just one of the best goals I've seen the Albion score in terms of sheer quality. It was absolutely breathtaking, and that is definitely a goal that deserves to win a match.
Absolutely,
it did, and we got to see Arsenal losing their rag as well, which is
Marcus. Hilarious. This is where you come in, mate. Tell us about Arsenal losing their rag.
Where they lose their rug. Well, after Mope assaulted their goalkeeper, which is where it all stemmed from originally, wasn't it? The accusation. I mean, the keeper, to be fair, I thought it was an innocuous challenge, and the keeper, you know, quite clearly fell wrongly or, you know, he got caught. But it's nothing that normally, you know, it happens all the time in football, whatever level you're playing at. And the Arsenal players obviously wanted to make more of a meal of it. And that's when Guendouzi started spouting off about how much he earns. And I think Mope actually earned more than him. So it was kind of directing his insults at the wrong player. But Arsenal were, you know, I mean, it was strange how ill-disciplined they were that day, but you know, to our advantage, because as Andy said, I mean, Andy's right. I mean, it was a goal to win any game, but you know, hats off to Lewis Dunk for the goal that he scored the equaliser. Yeah. I mean, that's what I'd call a captain's goal. That, I mean, it was, you know, it
crashed through everyone. Okay,
he didn't try the same against Palace this season and got sent off, but I can see why he was like, no, that ball's going over the bloody line.
Yeah, quite.
You know, and so it did, you know, and that was a real sort of goal to get us back, because you know, arguably, as Andy would say, against the run of play, you know, Pepe scored that goal and you thought, oh, here we go again, you know,
Incidentally, that's the sort of thing, if we fast forward 6 months, it's a goal I'd like to stick in front of Neil Mopo's face, probably every hour on the hour, to remind him that actually once upon a time he could do it, because if you fast forward to now,
yeah,
you know, the notion of kicking the ball into the net is a bit of an anathema to him. And you see that Arsenal one and the way he actually spun his man, it was dreamy.
Okay, Marcus, Andy said that was his goal of the calendar year. But we're going to come to the rest, to your goal of the calendar year shortly. But we've also asked for your game of the calendar year. So was that your game?
What, the Arsenal game?
Yeah.
No, my one would be the West Ham 3, Brighton 3. Because that was probably arguably the game where we started to turn a corner, I felt, because we were 3-1 down and managed to claw it back to 3-3. So that would be my game of the calendar year, most certainly.
And not linked to like Glenn Murray's last goal.
That was going to be my goal of the year as well. While we're on the subject, obviously, but you know, hang on.
is that your bizarre VAR of the year as well?
No, it's not. No, okay, we're going to come to that.
It doesn't.
It doesn't involve the VAR. Doesn't involve Glenn Murray.
Okay. Well, the rest of that month was followed by a draw at Leicester, where we should have won. Neil Pye missed the penalty in that game. And a 3-0 home defeat to Man United, where we just gifted them the points, basically.
They did look sloppy that day, yeah.
Okay, so let's move on to July then. And the month started with victory at Norwich, but Liverpool and Man City came and left with the points. Draws with Southampton and Newcastle. And then we finished the season with a victory at Burnley. Now, Leandro Trossard's goal at Norwich was it's up there for me in goal of the year for me. I thought it was a wonderful goal.
Yeah, quite the team goal. Again, the sort of thing you want to expect from your sort of like your number nine sniffers. I know he doesn't wear number nine, but it's that little sort of delicate thing that you realise is actually, you know, within their arsenal, it's within their armory that they've got the deft finish, the flick touch. I mean, if you rewind just over a year ago and you saw Morpay's header at the Emirates, and you can see that they can do it. But yeah, that one was a rare one of, you know, teamwork working well against admittedly a very, very poor side who deservedly went down. But yeah, it was kind of the sort of goal we've been screaming out for lately.
Yeah. But Andy, Leandro Trossard, he finished the end of last season really well. He got that goal at Norwich. His goal he scored against Liverpool as well was particularly not aesthetically pleasing as well. But this season, he's disappeared quite a lot.
He's just one of those players. I mean, some games he's absolutely brilliant. Other games, more often than not, now you're tearing your hair out. Like, again, it's because you know he's got the weapons in his arsenal. You know, he can beat people, he can cross the ball. It's just so frustrating when he fails to do so on a consistent basis, because you know he can do it. And I think he's, you know, he's struggling this season. He's one of those players again that sometimes looks really good as a substitute, and then you think, oh, okay, well then we'll start him, and then doesn't start very well. But then other games he will do. It's just that you just don't know what you're going to get with him. That's really the problem. And I think that's going throughout the entire team at the moment, which I think is the main, source of our current woes, is that really, you know, players who we know can play, they're just making mistakes, and they've just got to sort it out. And just like, you know, they just got to be better, because, you know, we know they can do it. So
it's about getting the consistency of high quality. Right, so I am convinced that since the new season started, that each individual player, I can't think of too many apart from Morpay who have regressed. And obviously, Morpay is a very important player, but I can't think of. I think that the qualities of each person has improved. It still needs improvement. They do look stale at the moment. Here we are talking about, you know, sort of, you know, turn of the year considerations of how sort of slightly stale they do look. When you saw them fighting and scrapping for their lives at the end of last season, you got to realise that they could do it. And even starting this season, you know, there was an improvement. And, you know, it's just that so long as they continue that improvement trajectory rather than, you know, the kind of the stagnation that I feel that we've hit at the moment. I don't think we've regressed. I think we've just hit stagnation.
Okay, Marcus, another nominee for goal of the year came with the last game of the season at Burnley, which was that of Yves Bissouma.
That was a great goal, yeah. I mean, he's been threatening to do that in a lot of games, and the fact that he's only scored a couple of goals for Brighton. I mean, I know he scored one against Bournemouth in the Cup, was it last season or season before under Keaton? You know, but kind of with the way Bissouma has matured as a player this season and certainly last season, you want more of that. And for some reason that hasn't happened, because that was a brilliant goal against Burnley. I'd like to see him doing that more often. you know, obviously there are reasons probably why he aren't, like he's not getting into those positions. I don't know. But yeah, it's a fantastic goal, which took a lot of us by surprise at the time. And it's like, but it went in and yeah, great. Yeah.
And for me, is my goal of the year.
Oh, there you go.
Is my goal of the year. It's just one that I do love. I do love a good 25-yard pile driver. And the way he hit it, let's face it, he has trying to been doing it in other games. It's just that most of the times they end up in row Z or straight in the mush of an oncoming defender. So, but like I say, I would never criticise him for having a go. And, you know, and when they come off, they look great. And I thought that one looked great. And so that's, for me, my Albion goal of 2020.
Okay. Okay, well, that was the last game of that particular season. Obviously, we did stay up and we eventually got the season restarted again in September, where we had 6 games in 2 weeks, which is a big ask. It started with a home defeat to Chelsea, where again we could have probably got a lot more out of that game. League Cup wins over Portsmouth and Preston, a win away at Newcastle, and then 2 defeats in a few days to Man United. Can I just talk about Trossard's goal? Because it's another, I've got it on my list. Trossard's goal against Chelsea, yay, nay? Should it be on the list or not?
Can you remind me of how it went in?
It was a shot from the edge of the area through a crowd of players, yeah. Keeper unsighted, went in the bottom.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah, it was a good goal.
And everyone criticised the Chelsea keeper. All the commentators who were going on about Chelsea. Never gave our players any credit, but yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes, I remember this one where we were talking about the sort of like the battle of the right backs, and we thought, well, you know, clearly Lamptey's better than Reece James, who then actually scorches a worldie into the top corner.
It was a wonderful goal.
Yeah. Thanks, mate.
He'll never do that again.
Never do that
again. No, he won't. But so he'd make sure he does it against us.
Yeah. Can I just point out that he'll never do that again?
Never. Never. Apart from
when
us.
We play with Stamford Bridge.
Yeah. So Man United, Andy, God, you try and unravel this.
Bizarrely, this is my game of the calendar year.
Yep. Okay.
Even though we lost, you know, other than like a winning scoreline, what more do you want out of a football game? I mean, this game had absolutely everything. And to think what that game would have been like with 30,000 people in there, it would have been a cauldron in there. And it was just fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I thought the Albion played absolutely superb for about 70 minutes of that game. There was a sort of 20-minute period where United got themselves back into it. But basically, we bossed the game.
Hit the woodwork five times.
For me, you know, the Albion calendar year was summed up in that game. We created, you know, we played really well. We created loads of good chances. But we had some hideously profligate finishing from the likes of March, and I think Trossard's chance that he missed, and then hitting the bar. Then obviously the scandalous refereeing. It's just utterly crazy, utterly crazy game. And you know, it's a shame we didn't win it, but blimey, that's entertainment.
Marcus, talk me through Leandro Trossard's perfect hat trick in that game of left post, right post, and crossbar. Oh,
yeah, exactly. Well, I think that sums it all up, AD, quite frankly. It was a perfect, non-hat trick. It was, Andy's right. I mean, as far as the game goes, I mean, it was a real roller coaster from beginning to end. You know, and you kind of wonder if we'd have got the point, where would we be in the table apart from 1 point better off or, you know, whatever. It was, I think since then Trossard's probably not been the same player, arguably. So,
I can't hit the goal, so that's the point.
Maybe mentally that's had a bit of an effect on him, as I think it has had on a few players. It's almost like giving everything and then, you know, not getting it, and then obviously all the, you know, nonsense that followed afterwards was it's pretty hard to take, but they need to shake it off, as Alan was saying. You know, stagnation sort of setting in, and it's kind of all started from that game. You know, it's arguably,
but the thing is about that, like I say, Trossard's perfect hat trick, the first two shots, left post, right post, I would say he was unlucky. There were good shots, you know, through a crowded area. They weren't sort of, you know, nailed on chances. They weren't sitters. And in fact, one, I think, just hit the outside of the post on its way through. It's the one in the second half where he smashed it against the crossbar. It was actually not dissimilar to Jeff Hurst's sort of final goal in the World Cup final. He smashed it with his left peg, but he just, it was a foot higher. And I'm thinking, that's where you've got to be more composed. The first two, a little bit unlucky. Third one, should have buried it. That's the one I'd say, you know. And what were the other two times that we hit the post? Does anyone remember who? I can't.
Solly March, I think, hits the post.
Solly March hits the inside of the post. And
And it rolled out, didn't it? Not in.
Adam Webster hit the crossbar with a header.
That's right. The header.
You're right. That last Trossard miss was just hideously bad.
Yeah.
And Solly March did almost the same thing, except his shot went 28 feet higher over the bar from a similar position.
Have any of you got the penalty given after the final whistle down as your bizarre VAR?
It's not so much bizarre VAR, it's just unusual because it's actually well within the laws of the game. You know, I've even got an old sort of You Are the Ref book, and it actually does mention penalties after the final whistle. So the issue about it isn't so much as to whether it was correctly given or not. It was correct. It's just the fact that, you know, with Solly March equalising with 15 seconds to go, and then we get another 2.5 minutes play before Man U finally get their penalty.
That's the bit that annoys me.
The
amount of time that was between, you know, Solly March scored, and then basically you trot along, you know, okay, bit of celebration, blah, blah, blah. And then you trot along, then basically Man United kick off, and then the referee blows a whistle. That's generally how it happened. We've all seen football games like that.
Absolutely.
But to give, for then another 2 minutes for Man United to have, you know, two or three bloody attacks or however many it was, and then all that.
And a corner. Okay.
Exactly. You know, it was a penalty. That bit is not, it's just the time.
There should have only been enough time to kick off, and that should have been it.
That's when the final. Exactly. But also, you also have to remember, was it Mopay that stuck his arm up? It was Mopay.
I was fortunate enough to be at that game, and walking down the tunnel afterwards, the abuse that Lallana was giving the officials after that, he was so angry about it. I think the Albion team were fuming
I mean, if that was in front of a full Amex, as Andy was saying, in the cauldron,
it kicked off.
You know, the referee probably would have blown after the Solly March equaliser, you know, because the atmosphere would have been such that it's like, right, we get the point, you know, referee blows up, come on, let's get...
Because you have the thing of the crowd knows... Right, you know, because you scream.
30,000 people whistling, basically.
You'll have that, exactly, because we were pressing for the equaliser, got the equaliser, you think, crikey, that was way over 5 minutes, you know, in your own mind, if you're not looking yourself. But then, you know, you're way over. But then it's another 2.5 minutes. You think, hang on, we're into 8 minutes here. No, I can't help feeling this. There's two particular games during lockdown where I think that the crowd reaction would have been incredible. One was that Man United one. The other one was the Arsenal game, where you think with Mopai's winner there, limbs would have been mad.
It would have been absolutely mental. But, October was a month to forget. Defeat at Everton, although another goal from Bissouma in that game was quite wonderful. A draw at Palace, with Alexis McAllister scoring a late equaliser, which was good. And another frustrating draw with West Brom. November, defeat at Spurs. Now, this one could probably be a bizarre VAR candidate with... Tariq Lamptey's goal being allowed to stand despite Solly March clearly fouling the Spurs player in the build-up.
Well, quite. Go on, Andy.
I've already discussed this on here on the show.
Yeah. And somehow we're still allowed to broadcast.
Solly March got the ball. It was a brief touch, but he got to the ball first. They were both challenging for it. Solly got there first. The other guy didn't, went over him. You know, get on with it. But the bizarre VAR is in this game.
It's
a scandalous thing where Harry Kane fouls Adam Lallana and risks putting him in hospital and gets a penalty when the incident was outside the box.
It wasn't on the halfway line, wasn't it?
Absolutely astonishing. I'm still fuming about it now. I'm still just so annoyed that Harry Kane just gets away with this cheating week in, week out. And everyone thinks he's just the bee's knees and, like, you know, forget it.
I mean, if you fast forward,
no respect for him at all.
England captain syndrome, that's what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. If you fast forward 6 months to a very recent game here, I'm going to say Southampton, I could be wrong. But again, Lewis Dunk in attack does exactly the same. Ducks under a fella who's going up for the header. He knows what he's doing. And I'm thinking, Lewis, don't do that because you know full well it is dangerous. But absolutely, it might have been in the Villa game. I can't remember. But yeah, and the referee calls him on it, foul. And you think, hang on, this is exactly the same. He's ducked under it. He's ducked under a player who's going flying over the top of him, who the player himself has wrist, you know, landing, crash landing on his neck. So we know that this manoeuvre is dangerous. And yet, you know, Harry Kane is somehow clever. No, he's as thick as pig muck.
One player was making an attempt to play the ball. The other one wasn't.
Well, he's trying to play the player.
And the one that was playing the player gets the penalty. It's absolutely disgraceful. And I'm stunned that that decision is allowed to stand. They really need to look at those challenges and say, look, the guy's not even trying to get the ball here.
How
can you be fouled when you're not even actively trying to
win
the ball?
They're looking at these, you know, concussion and things like that and bringing on these concussion subs and stuff like that. But you're right, those sort of challenges also need to be looked at as well. I mean, you know, it's like with rugby where they've sort of outlawed the, you know, the sort of, you know, the pulling down the scrum and things like that. It's exactly the same. It needs to be.
Okay, well, the month continued with a draw with Burnley, a win at Villa and a draw with Liverpool, where we possibly should have got more, actually, against the champions. It was another frustrating afternoon, to be honest, with that one with Liverpool. But
Mopay missing a penalty, and then what was it? Someone, I think it was even you, might have been said it, Marcus, got substituted by embarrassment.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he came off shortly after, didn't he? Yeah, and Connolly missed a sitter as well. And, you know, I know he's young, etc. But, mate, you've played enough Premier League games now. You know, you should be burying that chance that he had as well. It was, you know, I mean, of course, Mopay had scored a couple of penalties that he's missed this season. I think it's two now. And he'd be on about 7 goals, which isn't a bad return for the amount of games played.
No, but he is the leading scorer of the calendar year. He's got 8 goals this calendar year, which isn't a bad return, but... you kind of want more. He should have had more. He's taken 1 in 6 at the moment, and that's not good enough at this level.
No. Missing big chances, which we all know on the XG thing. Anyway,
someone will explain XG to me one day.
I'm trying to grasp it.
Okay, well, December rolled in. Fans were back in. Defeats to Southampton and Leicester. Draws with Fulham, Sheffield United and West Ham. Obviously, the final defeat to Arsenal this week.
More VAR rubbish against Southampton.
I think that's my bizarre VAR. Because,
is it?
Well, yeah. Purely and simply because the ref made the decision, the correct decision, and somehow he was allowed to... it was pointed in the wrong direction. The VAR should never have advised on that because he gave the right decision. It was never a penalty. It was outside the box.
Well, to be fair, the rule of VAR was followed in as much as the referee has asked VAR to check whether it's inside or outside the box. It's just that. And when we're not talking... When it's something like that, it's not clear and obvious error. It is fact. It's just... The VAR referee got his facts wrong. And you think, hang on, you've watched this and you could see the ball rolling backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards, backwards and forwards, and eventually decides it was inside the area. And then someone just did a freeze frame of it and you saw it was outside and you think, what kind of pillock are you?
Well, that's mine as well.
How do you get their penalties against us?
What, they're always being outside the area.
That one at the...
St. Mary's, Tirico. Yeah.
Oh, crikey, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. That was heinous.
I'm with you, AD, on that one. If you're going to have a bizarre VAR thing, because it's just bizarre, you know, it's not VAR that was the problem, even. It's just the fact that the referee, who, you know, is obliged to look at it, and with situations like the offsides and was it in the box or not, which incidentally was the same with the Harry Kane decision, is something that's taken out of the referee's hand. He'll advise them that was inside slash outside the box. That was offside slash not offside. And then there's nothing to look at. That is the notion of it. So, you know, the referee is asking the video assistant referee, was that inside or outside the box? And he's being told it's inside. He gives a penalty. The fact that we know that he was right in the first instance doesn't make it any better. It's just the VAR referee was was an idiot.
It's a sucker.
I agree.
Okay, absolutely. So we're running out of time. So obviously we've had your goal of the year was Bissouma at Burnley. Andy's was Morpai against Arsenal. Yours was Glenn Murray against West Ham. We've completely overlooked any Ali J goal here. I mean, obviously
one of us has to give
clearly,
it to that.
That's clearly the best goal. But it seems like last year. So pretty much. I think we can all agree that probably was aesthetically the best goal, but I would be different.
We've gone for four different ones.
I'm going to go with Danny Welbeck against Aston Villa.
What, for the goal of the year?
Just because I liked it. It was great. It's the sort of goal we don't score. Breakaway goal like that. Yeah. And it was just really, really, really lovely.
But you've jonered him since you waxed lyrical about him.
Yeah, I know. But I mean obviously nice the Murray goal, the Trossard v Liverpool, Ali J v Pompey as well. There's a great goal. Bissouma against Everton. I mean there have been some wonderful goals. Let's just go on to the player of the year. Before we finish,
I haven't done my match of the year, and nor have
what
you.
What was your match? Okay, what was your match?
My match of the year was actually 3-0 away at Newcastle. It was pretty much the complete performance. Don't get me wrong, Newcastle were rubbish, but I think we made them look rubbish. We bossed them in every single area. We wanted it. We finished well. You know, there was two very good goals from Morpay early on, and a third one from Connolly, which is what you want to see. We could have had more. Slightly spoilt by Bissouma's sort of wild kick out. But apart from that, I think it was the complete performance. And so for me, was my match of the year.
My match of the year was possibly, I'm torn on this one. It's either the Man United one, where we really should have won. And also the game against the champions against Liverpool, where again, we showed we are capable of holding our own against, the recent one, where we actually should have actually got a lot more out of that game and more composure in front of goal is required, frankly, for the rest of the season. We just need to be taking these chances when we're on top in games, and we were on top in that game.
Well, yeah. Marcus, so then there's just the final question for this first show of the year. Your player of 2020?
Player of 2020, that's a good one. For me, I'm going to say Lewis Dunk for 2020 because he has been, in my view, I think it was Murray said it. I know, yes, Glenn Murray again, but I think he said it. This was the, you know, he said that, you know, this is the season, but Lewis Dunk has now sort of stood up to be the sort of Mr. Brighton over Albion, a bit like, you know, Zaha is with Palace. Yeah. You know, people associate Brighton with Lewis Dunk now, and that's not a bad thing. And again, as I was saying earlier about his sort of like captain's goal against against Arsenal, you know, in Project Restart, it's, you know, so for me, player for 2020, Lewis Dunk.
Okay. AD,
Eve Bissouma, end of.
Okay. Right, Andy,
I'm gonna go Eve Bissouma as well. I just think he's probably the most improved player, and he's now improved, you know, to a pretty elite level type player. And it's just been a pleasure to watch him grow. I think really just so vital for us now.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go, I've got two players to go for here. I mean, I do get Marcus's point about Mr. Consistency and Lewis Dunk. I mean, some people are saying he's off form. No, he's not. He's absolutely fine. And he's still keeping that defense together. But yeah, for me, the Albion player of 2020 is Eve Bissouma, head and shoulders above everyone. He drives the team. So for me, head and shoulders, it's Eve Bissouma. But across the country, there's only one person who I could actually say is a player of the year. And it's not about his qualities on the pitch necessarily. I've got to say, you know, heads up and hats off to Marcus Rashford, man of 2020.
Yeah, I think we can all agree
absolutely.
With that.
Yeah, 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 definitely.
But apart from Willie, that goal he scored against us when that game we should have won. You know, damn him to hell. But, you know, and on that note, that's all we've got time for. So Thank you for listening to us last year. Thank you for continuing to listen to us this year. This has been the Album Roar with me, Andy Packham, on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM with Alan Wares, Andy Bass, Marcus Hancock. Thank you very much. Happy New Year to everybody. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening. Bye. Got a feeling 21 is gonna be a good year, especially if you and me see it in together. So you think 21 is gonna be a good year? Could be good for me and her, but you and her, no, never. I had no reason to be over optimistic, but somehow when you smile, I can brave bad weather. What about the boy? What about the boy? What about the boy? He saw it all. You didn't hear it, you didn't see it. You won't see nothing, no one, never in your life. You never heard it. How silly it all seems without any proof. You didn't hear it, you didn't see it. You never heard it, not a word of it. You won't see nothing, no one, never tell us so. What you know is the truth. Got a feeling 21 is gonna be a good year, especially if you and me see it in together. Got a feeling 21 is gonna be a good year, especially if you and me see it in together. To be over optimistic.